This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Every 10 years, the U.S. Census Bureau counts the number of people living in the nation. The next census is less than 2 years away, but this is such a big endeavor with so much at stake that a lot of planning goes into that census. And that's why a new question asking about citizenship status is such a big deal. It's a concern that non-citizens may not participate, or this could raise trust issues about the census for folks who are citizens and they won't participate. It raises the potential for an undercount with certain demographic groups. Why is this question being added? What other concerns are there for the census, especially here in San Antonio? As we talk about the census this afternoon, you can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Are you going to participate in the census or not? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. With us today, we're joined by William Fry, demographer, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, author of Diversity Explosion, How New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America. Also with us is Kenneth Pruitt. He is the professor of public affairs at Columbia University, former director of the U.S. Census Bureau, and Lloyd Potter is with us. He is the Texas State Demographer, director of the Institute for Demographics and Social Economic Research at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Kenneth Pruitt, you were the director of the U.S. Census, and you have signed on to a letter with concerns about the citizenship question. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. This was signed by five Census Bureau directors, pointing out to the Commerce Secretary that we really believe this will depress turnout in the census, not just of non-citizens, but of non-citizens who are living in households with citizens. And so we don't expect those households to come at anything like the rate we need to have a complete census.
And how did this question come about? Is this a new type of question?
No, it goes back to the beginning. We've been asking some version of a citizenship question since 1790. Naturalized, unnaturalized, later, and Bill Fry is much more of an expert, and he'll get to this in a second. But no, it's not new. But in terms of the contemporary moment, for the either coupled to the U.S. Census, we normally think about the decennial, is something very large, important survey called the American Community Survey, and we have been using the census question on that survey now for the last several decades. This is what we used to call the long form in the census, but starting 2010, we shifted all of that attention to the American Community Survey. Very successful estimates of the size of the citizen, non-citizen population, as well as, of course, working with administrative records. So we know a great deal about the citizen, non-citizen population, and we certainly know how to administer the Voting Rights Act using those data. We do not need to have the question on the decennial. And many people now think, with some evidence, that this is a political move, not a move to get better numbers. It's a move to rearrange, really, some of the red and blue seats around the country because of the lumpiness or the difference across states and regions of how many non-citizens there are in particular places.
William Fry, can you talk more about your concerns of this citizenship question?
Yes, I mean, I agree that this is just a horrible suggestion. It's bad science. It's bad for democracy. You know, the census is a celebration of really public engagement. And this is going to sort of politicize the census because a lot of people are going to feel they're scared to fill out this question, especially in this very politically volatile environment with immigration being such an important issue, deportation and so forth. It's bad science because even if you decided this was a good question to put on the 2020 census, it's much too late to test this question. I mean, given all the sensibilities about a question on citizenship among certain groups in the population, you would want to be able to do focus groups. All this kind of testing should have gone on years and years ago. And that's even assuming it was a reasonable question to put on, which it is. And I've done some analyses, as Mr. Pruitt, it says that the households with at least one non-citizen person in it are people who are at risk. There are 46% of the Hispanic population in the United States living in such households. 45% of the Asian population living in the United States living in such households, compared to 3% of whites or 8% of blacks. So you could make the same argument about rural versus urban, immigrant states versus non-immigrant states. There is a very high degree of unevenness in the concentration of these different groups, and that will play out in their under-enumeration in the census. It will affect apportionment across Congress. It will affect redistricting within states, and it will affect all kinds of other surveys that are based on the census over the course of the next 10 years. It's just a horrible idea.
Lloyd Potter, you're the Texas state demographer. Would this, if the consequences are what Bill Frye tells us, that this is going to hurt, especially with Latino counting, how could that impact what Texas sees with the census?
Well, certainly we have some areas within the state that have traditionally been high undercount areas. Certainly here in San Antonio, we have significant portions of the city that would be considered to be high undercount areas, and then the lower Rio Grande Valley. But if you look at all of the urbanized areas, and even if you go out and look at some of the more rural areas, are high undercount. When you look at those areas, they tend to be places where there are a high percentage of the population that are Latino, a high percentage of the population that don't speak English as they're at home, a high percentage of the population that are non-citizens. And there are other characteristics as well. So universities and things like that, where places where people are moving in and out a lot, where there are a lot of renters. But certainly the real significant ones were the ones that I was just listing. And that is a very significant element of our population in the state. So an undercount there certainly does have significant implications for our state. If we have, it's been estimated that if we have a 1% undercount in the state, that will cost us over $290 million, just 1%. And it's been estimated that for every person that's not counted, it costs Texas over $1,000 per person in terms of federal funds that come back to the state. So, and then, of course, there's the issue of apportionment, meaning right now we're anticipating that Texas will gain 3 or 4 new seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. If we have an undercount, maybe we'll get 3 and not 4. If we have a complete count, maybe we'll make it to 4. And certainly having representation in Congress is in every Texan's interest.
And when we say 3 to 4 new seats in Congress, that would give us what? How many seats? Like 38?
I think 38, yeah.
Yeah, and almost as much as California. Certainly would give Texas more sway in Washington, D.C., but the state of Texas has not entered into a lawsuit, as a few other states have, against the U.S. Census, trying to get this question stripped, and we'll try and puzzle out why that might be the case. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about the U.S. Census 2020. Already the work is being done. They're talking about printing up the forms. But will this question about citizenship be there, and what does it mean? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the 2020 census. This is the most authoritative data set that we have in the nation about who we have in the nation. It drills down as precise as they can get it to find out what is happening with the American people. How can you have a representational democracy if you don't know who you're representing? The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980. It's also very important for municipal governments, cities like San Antonio, to take a lead, making sure that their city gets all the counting done correctly. We're joined by Megan Dodge. She's the Assistant Director of Government and Public Affairs for the City of San Antonio to talk about what's happening there. And Megan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so here at the City of San Antonio, we've already been working closely with the Census Bureau and also, most importantly, with community groups to have a strategic plan and a comprehensive plan around, you know, really getting out there and encouraging people to take the census questionnaire and communicating with the whole community about the importance of having that accurate data and making sure we get a complete count to reflect the vast growth that's been taking place in San Antonio and that we expect, you know, a million more residents by 2040. So we want to make sure that the 2020 census accurately reflects that for several reasons. I really liked what your guest said about it being really about, you know, public engagement, and it truly is. So we're taking that tact and already working hard on the front end to have a complete plan and get that complete count done.
So when you have a high growth city like San Antonio, it's one of the fastest growing cities in the United States, we're dealing with a population shift. So all the more reason why it's important and why it's more difficult in order to get a precise count of the city. Is that what you're thinking, Megan Dodge?
I think the high growth means that it's really important, even more important, that we get the accurate count to show the growth from 2010 to 2020. We know that, you know, the Census Bureau makes really helpful data available that shows the areas of town and the demographics that are considered, quote unquote, hard to count. And so what we're doing is we're going to focus on those areas and work with the community to target with a really helpful message about the importance of the count. So yeah, it's really important because we are a high growth area to get that accurate count. But also just looking at kind of the demographics and how our community looks, that's how we're really going to be targeting our messaging for the 2020 census.
And so, so the city's budgeted money for that, almost $400,000?
Yeah, that's right. The city manager presented the proposed budget for next fiscal year for 2019 this morning, and there's about $394,000 in the proposed budget to help with staffing and to help implement a community-wide strategy around that.
And so that will be the money will be spent how? Staffing? What will they do? Will they just promote the census, or will they work directly with the census?
So something that the Census Bureau recommends and that we're planning to do is that each community has what's called a complete count committee. And so what we'll be doing is, you know, we've had two meetings and we've been hearing from groups and working with groups anywhere from chambers of commerce to social service organizations, immigrant groups, all types of organizations. We've heard from them on what strategies they think that we should take to get out the complete count and to encourage people to participate. So all of that feedback is going to go into this comprehensive plan and the appointment of a complete count committee. And so the funds that we've proposed for the budget will fund two positions and then just money for implementation of that community engagement plan.
And we heard from our guest earlier about the challenges with certain populations, particularly with Latino households. Is that something that you're going to be focusing on?
Yes. So we've been looking at the data, and we'll continue to do that to understand, you know, what demographics and what parts of town that we really need to work closely with. And so we're definitely doing that. We know that it's gonna need to be a localized message. You know, we're gonna have to have messaging and a campaign that helps, you know, our local San Antonio community know how important it is to our community. It is, you know, a federal program, a federal questionnaire or federal survey, and we're going to make sure that we communicate about it in a way that's localized and that helps everyone understand the importance of it to the whole community. And I also just wanted to say, if there are any listeners out there that have input and want to work with us, maybe you work with a neighborhood group or another association that wants to help us get a complete count, please reach out to our department and we're happy to work with you and get your feedback.
All right. Megan Dodge, Assistant Director of Government and Public Affairs for the City of San Antonio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let me go to a caller. The number is 210-614-8980, and David V. has called in. David V., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good day.
Hey.
My question regards the authorization for the census. Where does it come from, and what is the wording? Is it to count the individual people in the United States? Are the people, are the citizens? Just what is the authority?
Okay.
And what is the objective?
Thank you, David V. As Kenneth Pruitt, you were the former director of the U.S. Census. Tell us more about what it says in the Constitution.
Yeah, Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution mandates a decadal count of all residents in the country. The word residents was deliberately chosen because it was a highly fluid population at that time. We hadn't really fully established citizenship. Even after we established citizenship, this issue came back about the count, and the civil rights additions to the Constitution all stressed its residence. Think about it. Non-citizens pay taxes. They pay property taxes. They pay income taxes. They pay sales taxes. They use the roads. They use the schools. They're no different from the rest of the population with respect to their connection to the country. And that is true whether that includes the illegals, of course, or the undocumented. So undoubtedly, the census has to count as best it can everyone in the country once and only once. No duplicates and no undercounting. I'm going to really quickly, if I could, go back to what Megan said.
Yes.
One of the most exciting experiences I had in the 2000 census was coming to San Antonio and having a mass with the Catholic Church and then going down to the border and working with the Catholic Church without trusted voices. We do not get a good census. And one of the things to watch in Texas, if the citizenship question is on the form, and it can be used to find non-citizens, will the Catholic Church, will the school teachers, will the local chambers of commerce want to be out there on the streets urging people to answer it? We don't know the answer to that question. We would not have had a good census in 2000. We did have a good one without the enormous effort of local groups. Megan said it right. The census is a nationally designed, constitutionally embedded responsibility, but it happens locally. And if the local community doesn't do it, it will not happen. The government itself cannot talk people into this. Trusted voices, local activity must do that.
Okay, another caller. This is David C. And David C., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. So one of your guests said earlier that it costs us $1,500 per for those that aren't counted in the census. And so my two questions to that, and that we're not represented if they're not counted at the national, at the local and national level. Well, what's it costing us, in taxes for these folks your guest said they pay taxes and they do all this. I don't believe they pay those taxes. And if we're represented over numbers that are not correct, we don't know, then these are people that can't vote. And so why should they be represented? Thank you very much.
All right, David C., thank you for the call. Let me go to Bill Fry to address that with the Brookings Institution. Bill?
Yeah, well, I think what the framers of the Constitution had in mind was that not only do these people pay taxes, some of them may not pay as much as others, but they're there and they're part of our community. They're part of the people who are in our schools. They're part of the people who we have to have public services for. The idea that we have to somehow divide the population into some people who are more worthy to be counted versus people who aren't worthy to be counted goes against our whole idea of citizenship in the United States. So I think that's the sort of the broader idea that that the framers had in mind. And it's been kept up in every census since the beginning of our Constitution and since that very first census in 1790. So it's a tradition that is very, core to what we believe in as a nation.
Right. To the point about paying taxes, if you are a non-citizen in the United States and you're not authorized to be here, you still pay sales tax on everything you buy. You're paying, if you're living someplace, that they're paying property taxes wherever you go. You may not be an owner, but you're renting or you're someplace, you are paying property taxes eventually. Also, there are many, many, many people who are here without authorization who are paying income taxes as well. You are a taxpayer. These are taxpayers. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, Kenneth Pruitt.
No, it's just simply wrong to say that these are not taxpayers, and this has been true through entire history. And they fight at the, you know, we can have non-citizens in the military. The thousands of non-citizens who are here getting an education, enormously a major contribution to the University of Texas higher education system. So it isn't the question of whether you vote or not. That's a completely different dimension. It's an important dimension, but that is not what this census is about. It's not to find voters. It's to find residents who children don't vote, of course, but we still represent children in the census. A total count is the only thing that allows us to allocate something like $6 trillion over the next 10 years, $6 trillion. And this is where roads get built, how VA hospitals get built, and so forth. Ask your business leaders. Just simply ask your business leaders, do you need a thorough count in order to do effective business in Texas, San Antonio, wherever it is? And they will all say, yes, we need good numbers.
And Lloyd Potter, can you talk about how the census numbers are also being used in the commercial industry? People want, you know, they depend on this information to figure out what kind of businesses to start out and what to do with that.
Right. Certainly at the Texas Demographic Center, we serve as a resource center on demographic information for the state. Our most frequent flyers in terms of accessing demographic data are businesses. They're very interested in where the population is growing. They're very interested in issues related to income and housing. And they're making very important decisions about where their businesses are likely to be successful and where they can find a workforce as well. So having this information about the population is an extremely important element for Texas' continued economic viability.
And but having that information is critical for figuring out what type of services that we have to provide, you know, if schools even, you know, what schools, where do schools need to go?
Right. So certainly if you look at, you know, we were talking about money that comes back from the federal government, much of it is in the form of formula funding. And that formula funding gets dispersed around the state as a function of where the population with different needs and characteristics are. And also just the total amount that comes back to the state is related to the population that's counted in the census. So without this, one, the state would have a difficult time functioning, in addition to businesses and industry in the state as well.
And that goes for counting citizens and non-citizens alike.
People.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break. We're talking about the 2020 census. A lot of questions about what questions need to be on the census, including one about citizenship status. It's a really big deal that could impact how people participate in the census and trust in the census. Trust is a big factor, particularly right now when trust in the government is it's pretty low right now, and that's going to impact whether or not people decide to participate. Why is that? What can be done to increase participation and trust with the census? If you got a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source is going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the census today, and we've got a panel of experts for you. William Fry, he's a demographer. He has written the book, Diversity Explosion, How the New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America. Kenneth Pruitt is a former director of the U.S. Census Bureau. Lloyd Potter is the Texas State Demographer. Let's get some of our callers on the air. The number is 210-614-8980. And Jeff, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hey.
First, I just needed some clarification. You confused me in your opening remarks.
Okay.
I thought the census just counted bodies and ethnicities, just to see how many of us there are in any given place. And so if you can just clarify that for me. And the other thing about the citizenship question, I just think all 300 plus million of us should just put no and see what they do.
as an act of protest. All right, Jeff, thank you for that. So the census, the Constitution says we want to count the residents, but now we're doing a lot more than just counting people. We're getting a lot of interesting data. Kenneth Pruitt, can you talk about that?
Yes, it's very important to stress that the census is only half a dozen questions asked every 10 years, but the American Community Survey is in the field every month. It's a large, large survey, and it's designed to collect data on about 40 or 50 different characteristics. That's income, that's housing conditions, that's education. And it's that database that is needed by the commercial sector, by local planners, and so forth. So the decennial, that is the actual immediate count, is a very, very short questionnaire, and its primary purpose is to allocate seats to each of the 50 states. That's its purpose. All the other stuff is tied to it. But that count of everybody is what is a golden standard for all other surveys, whether they're federal surveys or state surveys or commercial surveys. So all other numbers are calibrated to the census number, and that calibration lasts for 10 years. So a state that has an undercount is going to have that undercount built into all other data collection that occurs, and that will have an effect. Just very quickly, because this came up during the break, disaster relief. Ask the people who run disaster relief programs how much they need the census data, and they will say, "We have to find elderly people in a hurry. We look at the census to find these elderly people. We have to find people who are in. We have to make sure we know where every VA hospital is, where every residential community is. We need that stuff instantaneously. We go to the census, we get it, and we know where to divert our resources. You simply cannot respond to a disaster like a hurricane or a fire without good data.
So, but to Jeff's question, and I understand his uncertainty, is that we have a short form and a long form, but really what we're really talking about right now is getting the short form filled out by as many people as we can, figuring out just the numbers of people and where they reside. Is that it, just in a nutshell? Is that it? No?
That is correct.
Well, there's...
Okay, Lloyd Potter.
There's the census form, and the census is separate. The long form hasn't been in place since 2000. That was the last year there were two forms in the decennial census. Since then, as Mr. Pruitt mentioned, we've been, I think about 2006, the American Community Survey has been collecting data that were previously collected on the long form in the census. So we no longer use the long form in the decennial census. All there is these very short list of questions that are asked on the census. It's very brief form, and there's no long form in the census any longer.
Okay, and so the guys with the clipboards are going to be going out in the neighborhoods. They're going to be having what form?
It's the census form, yeah, which is now just, I think, 12 items or something like that.
Okay.
So it's a very short thing. And they're not probably using clipboards anymore. It's kind of moved. The census is really moved into the 21st century. They're going to be doing most of the data collection is going to be over the internet or a smartphone using devices. And then if there aren't responses there, then they'll send out paper forms. And if there aren't responses there, then they'll go out and send out enumerators.
Let me go to another caller. This is Lisa. Lisa, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a question about how we respond to the census and whether or not we can choose just to not answer a particular question. So, for example, as a protest, if all Democrats wanted to just not answer whether we are a citizen or not, how would that affect the census?
That's an interesting question, Lisa. Thank you for that. Let me swing over to Bill Fry. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, that is an interesting way to do it. The earlier caller who advised everyone to say no to citizenship is an interesting idea. I think he said it provocatively, but in a serious way, I think it causes a real problem for the folks at the Census Bureau. They try to come back, and Mr. Pruitt can correct me on this if I get it wrong, in various ways to fill in those extra questions. In other words, you will get a phone call if there's enough of the census form that you have not filled out and have some people prod you about that. I don't know how many prods you get before the Census Bureau decides that they're not going to get that information from you. But I think just filling the form out and only answering one or two questions may not be enough. You may get some pushback from the Census Bureau if that's the case. The citizenship question, though, I think there may be some people who feel that they don't want to fill that out, and that may be a real issue for the Census Bureau to have to deal with that.
So let me ask Kenneth Pruitt that. If I fill out a question wrong and I do it deliberately, am I breaking the law? And if I could be punished for that? And if we do decide, if there is a group of people that decide in mass in protest to put non-citizen when they are citizens, if that could be more harmful than we expect?
The answer is yes, you would be breaking the law. The answer is we've never ever prosecuted anyone for not answering a census question. If done at scale, I've been called by people who are trying to think about creating campaigns of this. A different one is not is that everyone put in everybody put in the click yes I am a citizen. So you obliterate the distinction between a citizen and non-citizen. A lot of talk about that kind of thing. I told this one person who called and asked me about that. I said you may go to jail. The millions of people who follow you probably will not go to jail, but you may go to jail. He said, I'm prepared to go to jail on behalf of this. So this is a very serious issue. And I would just hasten along on the larger part of your question. Yes, there are all kinds of ways the census has to try to make estimates of people's characteristics when they don't answer the form. It's a technical process called imputation. We know how to do it. We do it fairly well. But if something at mass happened to a particular question, the Census Bureau would simply say the data are not good enough to report.
Right.
They would simply, and I don't know what would happen legally, but the Census Bureau itself has very high standards of data quality. And if they had what they knew to be wrong, seriously wrong, because they have other ways of estimating all these characteristics, they would simply say, we cannot release these data. We can't stand behind them. I think that's a distinctive possibility in 2020 on the citizenship question, even without campaigns, just the sheer level of fear in the country right now, especially in the, as Bill Frey just said, the households which have both citizens and non-citizens, 40-50% of some certain groups of that, that's enormous. And I can imagine them not answering, and I can imagine the Census Bureau then saying the data are not up to our standards and we will not release it.
Would we be able to segregate that information and saying, well, everyone's kind of playing around with this one question about citizenship, but we're pretty clear that they were filling out everything else correctly? Is it enough to cast doubt on the entire?
Yes. No, statistically, the really, really smart people in the Census Bureau know how to do these kinds of things, and they would know if the number of men, women, if the age structure, if the employment structure, if the income structure was roughly what we thought it was, give or take a percent or so. They will know that, and they won't have any worry about using those data. But they also know how many. Look, there are 8 million people in the country eligible for naturalization. There are another 5 million people in the country who are here as short-term residents. They've got jobs, or they're on our education programs and so forth. That's 13 million people that are non-citizens but are legal. That's a very large number of the population that
we should know about.
If we should know about it, and if they don't, if we don't get any data on them. Then we've got to really. The worry I would most have is not that they would deliberately not answer that question and answer everything else. Is they will not answer it at all.
Okay.
And if we get a very large undercount in the neighborhood of 4 or 5%, it's going to wreak havoc for all kinds of uses of these data that have now been documented.
Let me go to Will. He's on the line. Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I think that people should answer the census honestly. Protesting being asked whether you're a legalized citizen or not shouldn't be a problem. You're either a citizen or you're not. But when we have large swaths of our country that have a large illegal immigrant population and they're using up resources that should go to American citizens, that's a problem. It's theft, in my view, and it needs to be curtailed. So if you have a county that's 15% to 20% illegal immigrant, they're getting resources that should go to another area that needs those resources, deserve those resources, and our taxes pay for those resources.
All right, Will, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. We'll talk more about the U.S. Census when we come back from this break. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll talk about the census, some of the other issues that are challenging getting an accurate count here in the United States, including questions about the leadership at the Commerce Department, whether or not that could become an issue, also about the budget for the census. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the 2020 census. Every year, every 10 years, we have the census. And every 10 years, it gets more expensive to have one of these things. And there are some questions about whether or not they budgeted enough money to actually have an accurate count this year. Kenneth Pruitt, you were the director of the census 10 years ago. What do you think about the budget situation?
What is seriously underfunded right now, that doesn't mean the funds won't come in, but they've got to come in very fast to make a difference, is the partnership communication program of the Census Bureau. We've already tested the census as best we could with way less money than was necessary, but it's too late to test now. We're going to have to go with what we've got. The communication and partnership program is critical, and it currently is underfunded at something in the neighborhood of $1 billion, which means all of these partnerships that you've talked about in San Antonio, you will put your own money in, but you will not be getting support from the census, and they won't be staffed up to do that. That's the biggest issue I'm worried about on the money front.
Now, the census falls under the purview of the Commerce Secretary and Department of Commerce. Wilbur Ross, the current secretary, some current reports have painted him with an unflattering portrait, showing him as a businessman who may have siphoned off more than $120 million illegally from business associates, also saying that he may have lied to the Senate about his investment situation. I'm wondering what the future that Secretary Ross has in administration. Is a shakeup with the Commerce Secretary, could that change things with the census, Kenneth Pruitt?
Well, yes, I've been reading the what you just referred to, that story, and I have no comment on that as such. What I do have comment on, which is now well established, is the Secretary, and this is enormously disappointing to me, lied before Congress about the rationale for the citizenship question. And if you lie on that matter, you are really undermining the credibility and legitimacy of the census. And what most concerns me right now are all these legal cases, because it's being politicized. We have never had a politicized census, literally. The numbers are political. The use of the numbers are political on purpose, allocating power, allocating money, bragging rights. That's fine, but the process of creating those numbers cannot be political and still get the trust of the population.
And so let me go to Bill Fry on that. So, Bill Fry, you wrote a book, Diversity Explosion, How the New Racial Demographics Are Remaking America. Can there be people in power in the United States who are trying to sort of jake up the census in order to hold back this remaking of America?
Well, if one were cynical, one would say this is the real motivation behind putting that citizenship question on. I mean, if you look at the growth of different groups in the United States and the likely growth between the 2010 census and the 2020 census, those very groups that I mentioned before that are overrepresented with non-citizen folks in their households were likely to be under-enumerated with this citizenship question. Those are the groups that are growing the fastest in the United States. They tend to be younger. They tend to be more democratic in their voting behavior. They tend to be more urban, and they tend, with some exceptions, Texas being one of them, in bluer states. So, you know, one might see this as a scheme, as kind of a political strategy, rather than the very serious business of being able to count people in the United States in a very fair and representational way. And I think it's dangerous, not only because it's bad science and it makes the census something that it shouldn't be, but we really need to have this information about this growing racially diverse younger population in our schools and in our younger part of our labor force, so we can make those kinds of plans going forward. And that's what I've been writing about now for several years, about how this younger minority part of our population is so important. If they weren't there, and if they're not counted the way they ought to be, we're not going to be able to plan for them successfully. And their success going forward is the nation's success, especially a lot of older people who are going to depend on these younger folks in the labor force to contribute to Medicare and to Social Security going forward. They're going to want to have these people counted and being taken care of. And that will be hindered, I think, by a selective under-enumeration in the 2020 census. And I think that may be high. And as I say, if you were cynical, you would say this is the reason behind having the citizenship question there. But that certainly may be one of the motives.
Okay, let me go to a caller, and this is Eduardo. Eduardo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David. You've always got such great programs, and the panel is fantastic. I wanted to kind of make a comment and a statement about this. The individual that said about the tax paying, I pay my property taxes. So where I live, my renters pay the property taxes of the houses that they rent. They're paying those taxes. They're paying their ITINs. There's a whole series of studies showing that they put more money into the systems than what they utilize. So the undocumented population is not taking the resources, and that should be brought out to that statement. As far as the citizenship question, they can't answer that they are citizens because then they falsified the citizenship. And when they try and get the residency, there's a question if you actually ask that, answer that as a that you were a citizen, you misrepresented. And if you say no, now you lied on your application to get your residency, and they're going to catch you.
Okay, Eduardo, thank you for that question. So that brings up an interesting point about individual information in the census and whether or not other agencies in the government has access to that. So let me go to Lloyd Potter to talk about the integrity of the census, in the sense that whether or not law enforcement is going to be able to drill down and find out exactly what you said on the census.
That's a great point, David. The U.S. Census Bureau has something that's is required to comply with Title 13 of the U.S. Code. And Title 13 essentially prohibits any Department of Commerce employee, in particular the Census Bureau employees, from identifying or putting out any information about any individual, any business, specific business, so any identifying information. And they are not able to share that across federal agencies. They're extremely serious about this. In my role as a state demographer, have Title 13 clearance. And it's amazing if you go into the Census Bureau building how serious they are about maintaining confidentiality of the data. Essentially, you know, the information that we put on the census form is protected. No other state, law enforcement, no other federal or state agency will be able to gain access to your individual or your family's individual data. It's all protected within the confines of the Census Bureau.
Okay, I'm going to go to caller Harry. He's got something to say about that. Harry, welcome to The Source.
Hi. So during World War II, the census records were not used to identify Japanese Americans. I had heard that they actually were used.
Okay, let's find out about that. Kenneth Pruitt, can you tell us if those records were used to identify Japanese Americans and put them in internment camps?
That is true. They were used in the following way. They were used statistically. That is, where are the Japanese most living? if they're living on this block and you want to find them in a hurry, go to that block. There are not very many of them on the block next across the street or around the block or what have you. So they were certainly used, but they were not, no single Japanese was ever individually identified and therefore deliberately targeted. It's a thin line, but what just been said is true. There is no access to individual records. There, of course, is wide access to statistical descriptions of the population because that's why we take the census in the first place. And we do share the statistical descriptions with all kinds of other agencies, including with the state of Texas and with the town of San Antonio and so forth. But we are very worried, as a matter of fact, that someone would try to violate that policy. And that would be a very huge, huge setback if the data were used to actually identify individual undocumented residents in the country. That would be a huge setback for the census.
So, William Fry, what do you expect if the census, when the census happens, and if it's done in a way that it's not going to be, it's going to work out? What do you think what they're going to find? What kind of Americas do we have?
Well, we're going to find a much more racially diverse America, especially among our younger population. I think that'll be the case in more states than was the case before. And so I think the idea that the diversity explosion, as I like to call it, will be coming to a town near you. You'll find that in the census. When I analyzed the 2010 census, and I'm old enough to have analyzed a lot of census, I was really very surprised by how much of that diversity existed in more parts of the country than before. And I think I'm going to be even more surprised again. I think we're going to find the way people move from cities to suburbs may have changed a little bit in the last decade. We've seen for some part of this decade people moving back to cities rather than to the suburbs. But we only get a real final verdict on that when you count everybody in the population, and we're going to find that out as well when we get the results of the 2020 census. So there are two things I'm going to be looking for when the census results come out.
And Lloyd Potter, in about 30 seconds, what are you going to be looking for in Texas at the census?
Well, certainly Texas, as Bill Fry just mentioned, Texas is probably leading the nation in terms of our diversification of the population. And we're also seeing very significant geographic patterns that are occurring. So certainly suburbanization, and as he mentioned, kind of return migration to the urban cores, but we continue to have suburbanization. And we also have issues out west where we have a large number of our counties that are losing population.
An aging population in that area. Yep. All right. We're going to be talking about the census more throughout as we get closer to Census Day. I want to thank all of our guests, Bill Fry, Kenneth Pruitt, Lloyd Potter. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.